because you're just too...
Talking about splintered streaming and piracy again. Just sound some warnings.
With our special guest this week, Dave Internet.
With our special guest this week, Dave Internet. And then we'll talk about Sandman series. I am right in remembering that the Sandman series has been in a degree of development adaptation hell. I feel like they've been trying to do this for a very long time. And I also feel like at some point, I know obviously it happened with Preacher, but was Seth Rogen also interested in Sandman? Or was it just Preacher?
Was who interested, sorry?
Hello, welcome to episode 247 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Paul, a.k.a. Retroid.
This week we're talking about a couple of bits of the news and observations, just because it's not really news, it's just kind of like, of course this is going to happen, kind of thing, and what we've been up to. First easy bit of news, I think, it we were just discussing before we started recording, Netflix has got Sandman, cool. Wasn't there an attempt to try and get a film together like a few years ago? And we're pretty sure we talked about it on the show at some point. And Joseph Gordon-Levitt was attached to, I think, star, maybe even direct as well. And then he bailed on the project. And since then, the Sandman IP for like doing anything with it in terms of film or TV has just been kind of, oh, pardon me, sort of limbo, ironically. And then it's been announced that Netflix is going to do a thing. And I feel like this is an interesting move purely because obviously Netflix picked up Lucifer, which is technically loosely adapted from Gaiman's work as well.
Yeah.
In the same universe as Sandman. But obviously I doubt they're going to link it up because that would cause other complications. But... yeah.
That would be distinctly weird.
Yeah.
I would have liked if Lucifer had been a series that hadn't been morphed into the shape it is now, which is, although I like it.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked about it, you know, many times. It wasn't supposed to be a police procedural. It was supposed to be almost everything else apart from the police work bit.
Hmm.
You know, Lucifer, yeah, you know, he gets bored. He decides to just leave hell. And he is, you know, the first of the fallen, and it's, you know, in, well, as I've described it before, you know, things exist in the Gaiman universe. Because it's a bit like with American Gods as well. American Gods, you know, takes the concept and, you know, runs with it. They are manifestations of belief. So Lucifer and such, you know, exist because people, you know, have believed that they do. So, in hence the have you seen American Gods first season?
I've seen part of first season.
Have you seen the Jesuses?
No.
Jesus.
Right.
The I've Jesus. Read the book, but right. It's like a long time ago. But yeah.
Yeah. But that's a good example because of course Jesus is seen as in very different ways because there are so many, you know, Christians. So in the TV series there are many Jesuses because there's the you know, there's the Latin American Jesus. There's the sort of, you know, very Catholic Jesus. There's the African Jesus. You know, Episcopal. All these different, you know, takes on Jesus, and they all exist.
Okay, I was thinking when you said many Jesuses. You know that bit from the Evil Dead. I think the third one, Army of Darkness, with all those ashes running around.
Oh yeah.
I was thinking a bit like that. With Jesus is just running around.
I want to point out, is this the correct plural for having multiple individuals by the name of Jesus and potentially being, you know, part of the Holy Trinity or whatever, like,
the
running
Holy
around? I feel like nobody's ever had to contemplate such a name in plural before. I mean, obviously people have.
That Jesus loves you. That guy, that Jesus, though, thinks you're a dickhead.
Yeah. It's like Republican Jesus. None of the other Jesuses like Republican Jesus. So that guy's a douche. Okay. We don't talk to him.
Full respect towards Sandman.
I was just going to get in. It's a little bit like on my Steam game sorting when I've got all the Batman games. So I've just called this section Batman. You know, Batman's Batman.
Fair.
Because which one is it? We don't know. There's only one Batman, but there's multiple Batman games. Therefore, could be Batman. Don't know. Anyway, so it would be, you know, I would really love a Lucifer, which was, it did have a run in comics, not just a character in appearing in other game and, you know, scripted or, you know, created books. But yeah, you could kind of have them tying together, because after all, the Endless, of which Dream Sandman is one, they are fundamental. They're not gods in that sense. They are, you know, forces of the universe.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But yeah, with the Joseph Gordon-Levitt, which I'm sure he could have done a good effort at it, but I still can't shake watching several seasons of Third Rock from the Sun.
Yeah.
To be fair, I think he's come a long, long way since then.
He has. I know this, but there's still part of my brain that thinks long-haired teenager.
Mm.
I'm sorry, but yeah. No, you go on.
I think it's good that they're doing a TV series of it, just purely because the amount of material there is, like, you know, there's a lot, like, a lot of good comics, and there's only a few nowadays where it makes sense to make films, like if it's a standalone graphic novel like Road to Perdition, or if it's a very short series of comics anyway, like the Men in Black comics from the early 90s, where there was only something like 6 issues. So that makes perfect sense to make into films. But something like Sandman, and even Lucifer, is a bit like, maybe not. Maybe a TV series would be a better approach. And also, I mean, and I'm going to try and segue here. And also, I mean, the likes of Netflix is going to be looking for content and properties that it can do something with, as just about every other American freaking studio / broadcaster decides it's going to launch its own freaking streaming platform in the US and also maybe even in the UK and completely decentralize the streaming movement for online video content.
Yeah. I'm just going to, first I'll just, you know, address the, you know, the Sandman specific thing, which is, there are long story arcs and there are short story arcs, but one of the strengths of Sandman was the one-shots, where you could have, you know, specific characters visited. I've mentioned it before, but there's a character who crops up. It's been a long time since I've read Sandman, so I'm going to have to reread. But, you know, in preparation for this, which is my excuse, I'm sticking to it, shut up. But there's a character who first crops up, you know, fairly early on in the books, where on one of their forays into the immortal realm, Dream and his sister Death are in a tavern. And it's something like, you know, 14th century. And there's a perfectly, you know, normal, nothing remarkable about him, man who's, you know, drinking with his friends and boasting, I'm not going to die. You lot are going to die. You lot will grow old. I refuse to. So, them being the, you know, the fundamental forces of nature that they are, they think, well, this could be fun. So, Death makes a deal with Dream that she won't claim him, just to see what he does, because after all, the, you know, these mortals, they, you know, they live such a short time. What could he do with that time? Let's see. So they revisit him, you know, various times throughout the you know, the series, and you see him living into the, you know, the modern day and what he's had to do and what he thinks of being immortal and such, because just every now and again they will check in on him just to see, you know, do you want to die? Or are you fine as you are? And those are the, you know, some of the interesting ideas that, of course, Gaiman likes to visit in his works. And I would, you know, those kinds of stories would work really well as just one episode a season. Because in my mind, it's already, you know, like a, in a 7-season long series that's being made on Netflix, and I can watch it now. That's how much I'm looking forward to this. So, you know, you can have, you know, long arcs, short little bridging two-parters, you can have, you know, the one shot, and they will all feed into something much bigger. And that's why, if this, you know, sort of thing, you know, can, you know, can be done in a TV series, then it's fantastic. But yeah, the whole, we now in the UK, we had a very specific situation, didn't we, whereas we had terrestrial TV, and then we had Sky, and Sky sort kind of, you know, took over. That was the UK.
I was going to point out to people who are wondering, we're just sliding into the streaming subject now. Streaming.
Yeah. So the only comparison we've had in the UK really is we had terrestrial TV, which was, you know, the 4 channels and then 5 terrestrial channels that you could get, you know, free to air. And then you had Sky TV, which was the premium one. And that was the one that, you know, really shook things up. And it had a lot of imports. And that was, you know, it had, even from its earliest incarnation, it easily quadrupled the number of channels that you could get on TV, which, you know, which was weird for the UK.
And then people like Virgin wandered along.
Yeah. So, you know, but they kind of, you know, shuffle channels along. But, you know, you tend to get broadly the same with a few exclusive things, you know, left out here and there. And that's always annoying, but there's usually been an option like Now TV, which is the streaming version of Sky,
yeah,
more or less. You know, limited number of channels, but it has the big ones that, you know, people care about. So even if you're not subscribed to Sky, you could still watch Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I've seen various Americans say that, you know, what looks like it's going to be happening with streaming, which, you know, I'll leave up to you to, you know, describe. Mm. It sounds like a return to the bad old days of cable packages.
Yes. But via the internet.
Yeah.
So.
And... yeah, I'll just say, yeah, it sounds like it's another bandwagon. It sounds like MMOs all over again. When all the big companies decided, you know, World of Warcraft is making big money, Ultimate Online is making big money, therefore we can all make big money because everyone has an unlimited amount of time and money.
Yeah. So, yeah, so we don't obviously have unlimited, all of us have unlimited time and money. That would be, you know, too ridiculous.
You know, we're not lucky enough to bump into the manifestations of dream and death in an English tavern.
But I mean, say for example, me and Emily, we have Netflix, we have Now TV, and we have Amazon Prime. Now, obviously, those are three big streaming, you know. And yeah, sometimes we go heavily on like the Now TV and whatnot and watch, you know, certain things like The Rookie or like Chernobyl recently.
Yeah.
But we'll get into that later. And yeah, obviously stuff like Game of Thrones and the odd thing here or there. And then we'll kind of have like a period of going on Netflix a lot and trying to, you know, watch whatever shows and whatnot.
Yeah.
And yeah. Then Amazon Prime. And basically it's, I think we definitely tend to kind of switch between them in the sense that, we will primarily look for something that's on the streaming service that we were last, you know, watching, in essence. So, say for example, I've been watching a lot of The Rookie recently, so I've been going on Now TV and seeing what will also interest us in that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the point that I'm building to is the fact that if you have even more streaming services, you will kind of get this thing where you will basically pick your favorite and mostly stick to that.
Yeah. And that's always happened.
Yeah.
You've every single time there's a format, you will gravitate towards one or the other. Mm. And look at people like us who can afford various different gaming formats.
Mm.
We'll gravitate towards one for one reason or another. Maybe because we've spent time with that brand in the past, and it's getting those again.
Mm.
Or because we've got friends, who game on it. So if we want to do online gaming, then that's...
Only, obviously, with streaming services, it's different because it's not the physical hardware. Yeah. That's the issue. It's basically the subscription.
The right of access.
Yeah. So, say, for example, even though we've got, a Switch and a PS4 and an Xbox 360, that's gathering dust. We haven't played it in absolutely ages. We've already paid for that 360, so, Microsoft's got our money, but it's not getting any extra from us. Whereas streaming services, if we're not watching Prime, or if we're not watching Netflix often enough, eventually we're going to be like, that's an extra cost and we're not using it. There's nothing on the horizon that I want to watch, so we'll just cancel it.
Yeah, and this is just my my kind of experience. Netflix has got a hell of a lot of stuff that I can watch.
Mm.
And a hell of a lot of exclusives that, I'm going to watch on there. On the other hand, I've tried trials of, Amazon Prime.
Mm.
And I appreciate that, lots of people will say, they'll shop on, Amazon. So in other words, getting that, everything lickety-split, just, postage included, because you're on Prime, is a massive advantage that they have, definitely, worked that out well.
Mm.
And of course, it makes a hell of a lot of sense in America.
Yeah.
Where you've got, all the, shipping and freight charges and all, all kinds of things going on there. So it makes great sense there. But to me, every single time I've tried Amazon Prime, I've struggled to find things to watch, and that's within the 30 days.
Yeah.
So... things like Picard, Star Trek Picard, whether or not it ends up being called that, of course I'm going to be watching that. This isn't debatable. It's like, am I going to be breathing oxygen? Yes, I'm going to be watching Star Trek Picard. But when it comes to justifying the cost of subscribing to Amazon Prime on top of that, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
And... as for all these other companies like Disney wanting to do...
Disney Plus is happening.
Yeah. Now, what exactly is going to happen with those in the UK? Because when they talk about all these streaming services, they usually talk about the US.
Okay, well, there's one specific one which I have looked at, because the thing is that since sometime around post-2010, certainly, Sky signed a deal with HBO. The American channel, to be the exclusive distributors of HBO content in the UK. And the platform that Sky does that on is via the channel Sky Atlantic.
Yeah.
Now, they extended that deal back in 2015, but that deal runs out in, next year. And there hasn't been any word of a new deal yet. And I read on a Digital Spies forum that somebody was listening to a Radio 4 Media show. They had some guy or woman, head honcho from Sky Atlantic on the show the other week. And when asked about HBO exclusive content and its future on Sky Atlantic, started to get a bit cagey. Now, is that KG because they're still negotiating the contract, or KG because HBO's thinking along with, because they're part of Warner, maybe Warner's going to launch its own crap in the UK. But then that's interesting, because then we go back to Sandman. And I believe that despite the deal that's obviously been reached with Netflix to have Sandman, I believe that's still a Warner, like it, Warner owns the rights there. Yeah. Sandman was published under Vertigo?
It was.
So that's all Warner because it's DC and Warner owns all that. So, even like, there's this, you know, it's what's going to happen with shit like that. Like, there's already, you know, like there has, like, if the deal's up next year for something like HBO shit appearing on Sky Atlantic, I'm assuming there'd be some kind of negotiation on at the moment. So maybe that's why they're getting KG. I would
assume so, yeah.
But still, we can't be sure. We can't be sure. So, meanwhile, Disney Plus, yeah, I'm just going to double check with Mr. Google, but I think Disney Plus is coming to the UK. Somebody talk. He's not me. Whilst I Google.
Well, I was just going to say, in the US, we've got they've got the situation with CBS All Access, or whatever it's called. Now, one good example of that was that that's one of the reasons they wanted a Star Trek series. So that's why Star Trek Discovery exists, because they wanted a big property to say you can only get it on our streaming service. And that has by all accounts, worked really well for them.
Mm.
And I'm happy, I'm happy with that, because, I like Discovery and fuck the haters.
Yeah. I got some stuff on Disney Plus. It wouldn't be coming to the UK until next year, because in theory it's not launching in the US until November.
Right.
So you'd be looking at least a couple of months before it would come to the UK. But obviously that's films, animated series, all their Marvel shit, all their ABC,
all the Star Wars.
Yeah.
All the Star Wars and all the Fox content as well, potentially affected by that.
Now, that could be interesting, because what exactly will be the relationship with Sky?
Exactly, because they've always been quite close over here for cross-media content.
Yeah. Now, the reason that I brought up CBS All Access is that, you've got Star Trek Discovery, but of course that's only exclusive in the US, or is it possibly as North America? So it probably includes Canada as well.
It might include Canada. I feel somebody Canadian I know might have moaned about it.
Yeah, but outside of that, Netflix has the series.
Mm.
And that will have worked very well for both of them. I'm sure of that.
Yeah.
So, but then you've got Star Trek Picard, which is another CBS, All Access. I can't remember whether it's Access or All Access. I don't care.
It's anyway. Whatever CBS
the CBS streaming service. But of course, it sounds like Amazon have managed to pluck that for Amazon Prime outside of the US, North America.
Yeah.
So what exactly is going to happen with that? Is most of the rest of the planet just going to have a handful of streaming services? We don't have, as you mentioned, HBO streaming.
Yeah.
That's part of Sky. They did a deal. So, you can still stream HBO, things, but then, it's from a third party.
But then if we go back to something we talked about a few episodes ago, which was with the BritBox thing that ITV and BBC are cooking up together.
Mm. I keep forgetting that's a thing.
Yeah, so that's a whole load of British homemade content potentially going from the UK arms of Prime and Netflix to create a third. Well, actually, no, it'd be a fourth main platform, because you'd have freaking Sky and you'd have that fucking thing, then you'd have Netflix and you have Amazon, and it's a level of fragmentation I'm uneasy about. Everyone's got unexcited about shit like Killing Eve and Fleabag and stuff, I think, the most over the past year. Those are the things that I've had recommended to me the most to, like, go and stream, which I haven't, because they're not in genres that I prioritise.
You should watch Killing Eve. It's great.
Yeah, still not in stuff I prioritise. But it's good.
It's great. It's great.
Too many watch people. Killing Eve. I don't trust it when too many people keep saying that at the same time. So I tend to do the opposite.
Yeah, you're very, very sceptical when lots of people tell you to do so. In fact, I think I remember you freaking out a little bit when Mamma Mia was released.
Yep.
And, like, all the mums in the nation were just like, oh, yes, yes, we need to go to the cinema.
I was terrified by that. I was like, mind you, what was reassuring is that my mum fucking hates Mamma Mia and doesn't understand why people think she likes it. But it's because she's a mum, and they instantly think that all mums must like Mamma Mia. And it's like, actually, it's not the case.
Well, it's like with me, I must have an opinion on the foot sports.
But quite.
I do have an opinion on the foot sports, but it's not the one you're expecting.
Mm. But anyway, going back to streaming, I think there's a risk of fragmentation now, more so in the American market than we've, you know, because even freaking cable, they haven't had that many providers, you know, at the same fecking time.
I keep hearing people curse the name of Comcast, but I couldn't tell you what they actually provide.
Yeah.
I mean, I think at the moment, with so many different TV series kind of coming to an end as well, in a way, I think people are going to be reluctant to kind of continue on with, you know, packages and whatnot. Like, yeah. Say, for example, you know, John Oliver kept on making the, you know, kind of the point that now that Game of Thrones is off the air, there's going to be like a massive downturn in the people that are subscribed to HBO in America. And yeah. I think that's going to be like a similar thing with several other, you know, kind of networks and whatnot with their big shows.
I think they're going to find that there's a lot of fair weather subscriptions and they're going to find it very hard to retain people. Whereas I'm perfectly happy subscribing to Netflix because chances are there's going to be something new, which, I'll come across when I'm browsing.
True, but by the same token, if that fragmentation does happen in the UK, obviously Netflix are going to get less series that are kind of developed by other kind of companies and whatnot, and have to focus on stuff that they're producing themselves.
Well, one of the things I was just discussing this with my wife earlier, where I was thinking Netflix and companies like that have got the perfect business model. Because they can invest in a series which, you know, might cost, you know, a few million, depending, you know, where it's from. And that series might have an issue recouping its cost from, you know, the territory where it's from. For example, there was that zombie series, Kingdom, which I mentioned watching, that which South Korean. And it's a period piece, but it's zombies. And the idea of, you know, that being, you know, on anything like a reasonable budget and being able to make its money back. I mean, even bearing in mind that in places like South Korea, they're going to have a, you know, just like us, that, you know, they're going to have a period drama industry. So they can, you know, furnish outfits. They've got sets. They've got locations they can use. All of that, you know. There's going to be at least some infrastructure there so that they can make the, you know, the kind of things that, you know, will, you know, play well on their TV. But somewhere like something like Netflix comes in, they swoop in and say, hey, you know, can we buy the worldwide rights for that? X amount of money. And X amount of money may be, oh, that's a good chunk of, you know, the budget for making the series in the first place. But there's going to be far less issue making that money back when it comes to playing it to the rest of the planet.
That's true.
Versus local TV. So they, you know, they've kind of got a good thing going there because last night we watched the first part of the Godzilla animated series made by, it's a series of films.
Yeah.
And, you know, Toei Animation and Yeah, that's probably had far more people watching it just because it's popped up on Netflix when they've got, is that new Godzilla film on here? Oh, what's this? I could watch that. Or, you know, people who just watch anime or, they want to, a movie flick. And they might, if that was going to be in, a rental, then maybe not. But because it's there on Netflix and it's already part of your package and, with whatever the hell else you're watching, then why the hell wouldn't you if it's right there? It's immediate. So they've got a good thing going when it comes to getting smaller things that they, otherwise, wouldn't get, much of an audience outside of, at one place. So they know they can invest more. So they're getting, people... keep staying with that platform, whereas
I'm just trying to think now with the big American TV companies, the studios, like what the really standout series are that they've had, that like, because I don't pretty much remember much in the way of American genre TV prior to the mid-90s, because that's when I started getting interest in stuff like Buffy and Farscape.
Which is fair.
But obviously Farscape was technically a cross Australian production, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that like for each of the US networks, that's the word I'm looking for, there's only there's less than a handful of shows per network that I recall, and there's like almost nothing current that would, if they tried to replicate their model in the UK, that I would be drawn towards. Like, I'd be like, I don't care about your back catalogue of shit. Because basically, I mean, let's face it, American TV up to a certain point in the 90s was, like most TV, it was just cheesy shit.
Yeah,
every sort of production corner of the world had the odd thing that was amazing that still has a reputation today amongst people over a certain age. And when I say over a certain age, basically anyone who can remember the 90s.
Well, you've got the very good excuse with your thing about remembering the 90s. You've got the very good excuse that you were only 4 when the 90s started.
Yeah, that is true.
I mean, that's a damn good excuse, to be honest.
Yeah, but, film.
What do you think of early 80s, British TV? Did you get, I don't know, because other than Jamie and the Magic Torch and reruns of Charlton and the Wheelies, I was 5.
But the other thing, though, about TV prior to the 90s, for a lot of stuff produced globally, is that it hadn't taken lessons from film.
Exactly.
And with the advent of more cinematic storytelling, because of freaking networks like HBO in the first place, nobody had really upped the game, so you don't actually have very many not cringeworthy series that aren't from the last 30 years. There's maybe some comedies which, if you ignore the mores of the time in terms of what's acceptable sources of humour, you can watch some Python, you can watch some... Actually, I'm drawing a blank. I think it's pretty much Python at that point. I know, maybe you could watch something like from over here in the UK, maybe something like The Good Life might still be funny. And that's from, the 70s?
Yeah.
But a lot of older TV, yes, much older generations like it, but they're also not going to be ones buying the subscription services and stuff, which actually I think with the BritBox, that's a problem. Like, oh, we're going to have a whole archive online. Mm. And it's like, cool. For instance, in Cornwall, which has a quite an older population compared to a lot of the rest of the UK. Funny story.
You're the British Florida.
A bit, actually. just as weird sometimes. They're not quite as weird. Just as we've been there's like the fine line. But anyway, according to information that was released by various groups in the past year, 13% of Cornwall's population has never been online. Now, I would, to extrapolate from that, I suspect a huge proportion of that are people aged over 65.
Yeah.
To extrapolate further from that, of those who are aged over 65 in Cornwall, of which there are many people, the majority of those who... it isn't a majority of those who are comfortable with using the internet, comfortable with using multiple devices, comfortable with dealing with ongoing payments to something that basically isn't insurance or utilities bills.
Yeah. Good luck with that.
Yeah. So basically, like, the material that the BBC and ITV is like oh, everyone's going to be excited about, actually, those age markets are going to find there's going to be a barrier to them actually accessing that service. And then people like us, who know how to sign up for that shit, are going to be like, well, basically, you've got Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Tumbleweeds. There's been the odd, for instance, nothing ITV pretty much, but except for, no wait, I tell a lie, Dear James Henry's Delivery Man would be about the only ITV series, oh, and No Heroics, that's two ITV series I could give a heck about. There's, and on BBC, Doctor Who, Strange, Jekyll. But wait, I've got a whole load of Doctor Who on box set. I've got Jekyll on box set. Strange we've never picked up on box set, but I mean, I'm not that worried about it. There's not a lot of BBC stuff that I'd be worried about having access to as a box set.
There was that rather excellent BBC Three genre series, but I cannot remember the name of it.
Fates,
that was it. Yeah. Yes, thank you.
You got Fates and the original Being Human.
There should have been more of that. It was good.
Well, yes, it's funny you say that. I think we talked about it extensively around the time that BBC Three was being taken off freaking broadcasting air, about how, oh, that's funny, it wins some BAFTAs, and then, oh, we're cancelling that, oh, we're not doing our own fucking genre shows anymore, even though that was fucking good and people actually liked it. Oh, we're not actually doing proper TV with BBC Three anymore. Fantastic.
With you saying about, you know, genre stuff, you know, there are a few things, you know, to bear in mind, and there are interesting comparisons.
Yeah.
One, genre TV in the UK has always been hindered by us wanting to do it on the cheap, because we've simply not seemed to understand that if you want something a bit weird, you can't film it on the, you know, the set of Crossroads.
Yeah. I.e. like either Doctor Who, like early Doctor Who, or Blake Seven.
Yeah, yeah, Blake Seven was infamously
underfunded.
More or less, yes. It was promised to be, you know, that they could make it on a budget which was, you know, similar to a, you know, a standard running series, and that showed on the budget, and it limited its appeal because growing up, there was American sci-fi, which, you know, generally looks a hell of a lot better, and then there was British sci-fi, which looked like it was, you know, it was going to crop up on the "Here's one we made earlier" on Blue Peter. You know, coat hangers, washing up liquid bottle rockets, you know, all of that kind of thing. Very homemade, very budget. And there was the big change in 1987, which was the arrival of Star Trek: The Next Generation, when they realized that, you know, if they were careful with it, they could do semi-motion picture level special effect on a TV budget. And it was still one of the more expensive TV series that, you know, that were made. It was infamously around about $1 million per episode. And, you know, it was popular for that reason, because certainly the spaceships didn't look like that they were on a piece of string. So, you know, that did well. And a more recent example is if you compare a streaming service TV series like Star Trek Discovery to a network series like Orville. Orville is very obviously done on a much lower budget.
Yeah.
It looks like it's a TV series.
It looks like it's a 90s TV series, specifically.
Yes. In a lot of ways, it looks like Next Generation. That is not a bad thing. I've said in the past, I like Orville. I'm not one of these, Orville's for the real Star Trek fans, and Discovery's rubbish. It's like, no, I like both. But, you know, if for example, you do what I did with, you know, several times recently when Discovery was on at the same time, you know, oh, they were running, you know, not on the same day, but, you know, you'd watch this episode of Star Trek Discovery where, you know, the effects are very good. They are, in a lot of ways, you know, modern sci-fi movie level.
Yeah.
And then you switch over and you, you know, you watch The Orville and you think, this is definitely looking a lot cheaper.
Absolutely. I think, you know, because obviously that's down to production value, down to, you know, camera work, down to...
I'm gonna bring this back now. Bring this back to streaming fragmentation of marketplace.
I was on that, but one of the reasons, of course, that, you know, the streaming services like CBS, CBS, whatever they are, you know, were throwing money at these was that they realised that they needed a spectacle. They needed something that looked like you were getting your money's worth.
Mm.
And that's why HBO, et cetera, have made such a good, you know, impact. Because you've suddenly gone from, you could tell, I'm going to make a reference and it may be lost on you, but if you were watching a BBC series or an ITV series in, say, you know, the 80s, you could always tell when they were on location somewhere because of the, you know, the quality of the picture.
Yeah. And they kind of use their outdoor cameras.
Yeah, it looked good, and then they'll just say, oh, let's go over there, and, you know, they're suddenly standing under a plastic boundary in crap light, and everything looks plastic again. So it's, oh, right, you only had the budget for doing that bit. So, you know, you use those cameras and et cetera, to get this, and you've tried to replicate it, and we can all tell it looks bad.
Hmm.
And... that's gone now. If something was made for TV, now it stands a very good chance of, if it, you know, the only reason it's not in the cinema is that they think it stands a better chance of, you know, getting, you know, eyeballs by, you know, being on TV or on a streaming service.
Mm. I mean,
there's now no longer that big gulf.
I mean, it's also to do with the fact that now we have massive TVs with high definition and high dynamic range and whatnot, and so you can actually tell the difference. You know, at home, when you're like in the 90s, when you've got your, you know, your small TV in the corner of the room and whatnot, it didn't matter. Whether you know, you could actually tell whether some of the effects are kind of wrong because you know, there's like a halo around it, or there's
Then going back to my earlier argument, you can tell the quality of the story writing difference between older stuff and newer stuff, and there really is that tipping point in the 90s because HBO raised the fucking game there, and you and that's why we have ended up with Breaking Bad. That's why we've ended up with, like, something like Chernobyl.
Mm.
I mean, you know, which obviously Breaking Bad's AMC, I know, but at the same time, like, it's just that kind of really story-driven, character-driven spectacle, which you didn't, like, I mean, God, I try to remember, like, 90s TV shows that I vaguely recall that weren't Buffy or Farscape...
Or X-Files?
I still remember Sliders, but sometimes that's a bad thing.
Yeah, and Sliders.
yeah,
so basically, not genre stuff. The only stuff I remember is Baywatch, vaguely, because like it occasionally wandered onto our screens when we were like channel hopping.
Slow-mo.
And then I hear people talk about things like Dynasty and that, but I never... saw any repeats of it or anything.
I mean, you have like the supposed classic 80s action
Magnum PI.
You got Airwolf, you got Knight Rider, A-Team, stuff like that,
which I only ever saw the odd repeats of, but even again, that's still not enough to justify subscribing to, like, if you coupled, like, which, because obviously they're with specific networks, couple that with their newer content, like, that's still not enough to be like, I'll sign up to that one network specific streaming service.
Yeah,
it's not enough to justify it. It's like, that's like, even if you had cable, the amount of output coming into your home would not be worth the whatever that subscription fee is in proportion to a larger cable fee Like, it's not proportionate.
I mean, bearing in mind that, I mean, DVD and Blu-ray isn't actually totally dead yet as well.
Yeah.
Which means that, you know, if there is one thing on, say, for example, Netflix that you really, really want to watch, but nothing else, people will wait for the DVD to come out and buy it on DVD.
Yeah. I was just thinking, this kind of ties in with what we were saying a few episodes back, where when it comes to the, you know, the Marvel movies, you know, the, you know, all these, you know, Avengers, et cetera, et cetera. They're very frequently, you know, well, they're very successful. They look damn impressive, but most of them are just being sold on the spectacle. It's a little bit like, you know, cinema has become, it's the place for spectacle. It's a place for 3D. It's a place for something that you can't get in your own home. And with what Paul was saying as well, with, you know, we've all got much bigger TVs now, generally speaking, you know, and even if you didn't necessarily want a bigger TV, chances are it's going to be a lot bigger than it was in the past, simply because, you know, the costs have come down so much.
Yeah.
I mean,
you can get a much higher quality picture and they're, you know, easier to run.
Heck, you could even, like, have a soundbar or, you know, 7.1 surround sound system and whatnot, and basically have that, you know, cinema experience in your house.
Yeah, that's no longer a really, really expensive proposition. You can do that relatively cheaply.
Yeah.
And that's part of the reason why TV has come on leaps and bounds. You know, you can get that, you know, sort of quality. You can, you know, enjoy all these things, and you can still watch total crap on it.
Do you know what? I've just remembered, there is one British broadcaster whose content I do tend to like, and I don't mind box sets of.
Channel 4?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think Channel 4 with their book, because they've done a box set approach before the other channels. Yeah. British
and
channels.
And complete box sets as well. Yeah. So if it says you're going to get the complete, I don't know, Misfits or whatnot.
Teachers,
you know that you're going to get every single season. It's not like, oh, yes, we're going to give you the last two seasons or
whatnot.
Plus,
they've included the documentary. Yeah. Like, they've done actually really well. When you sign into, was it All Four, you actually do get quite a bit there. And yes, okay, there's ads, which I'm fine with because it's technically a free service.
Yeah.
But it's like, no, actually, this is stuff that I'm interested in. This is the thing you've got BBC and ITV. Sign up to do business. I'm pretty sure I've made this point before. They're targeting themselves at an older market, which, past a certain point, is less capable of getting onto that service anyway.
Mm.
And they've got nothing to entice younger audiences, pretty much, except for relatively nothing. Like, I can't believe that the BBC can sustain themselves on people wanting to rewatch Poldark, and ITV sustaining themselves on people who want to watch rewatch fucking like Love Island from the beginning, like from younger viewers who can get onto the service, and then older viewers who do have the experience to be able to sign up and that they don't have a binge culture, so they're probably going to sign up for the service and they're not going to really binge anything, and then it's going to be like, oh, why did we sign up for this again? Oh, there's not like any live sports or anything, the guys will say. I'm stereotyping now. The ladies will say,
I'm shaking my fist
there's,
at you.
There's something, I don't know, what the hell, what? British broadcasting is really shit, serving female markets beyond reality TV.
Knitting bee. There you go.
Or that, you know, something, the next Poldark, like maybe they don't actually find the next Poldark and they're just like, well. I mean, there is stuff happening with British television that is intriguing, but it's not enough to make me want to subscribe to a service for it when I'm already paying for a TV license.
Which costs
more than some streaming services a month. Anyway,
I mean, it's literally a case of, I don't think we've actually turned the TV on to watch anything on there, as in, like, you know, broadcast.
Other than the news.
Other than, like, yeah, the news. It's all kind of either catch up or, more likely, stuff like Netflix and, you know, Amazon Prime.
We went out of our way to watch The Last Leg the other week.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's true.
I was just going to say, the first bit of Broadcast Channel 4 I have watched in years, literally years, was the most recent Last Leg.
Yeah.
Just because I was flicking around and, oh, it's on. I've enjoyed the bits of this I've seen in the past. Okay. But otherwise, things I've used all four for. Re-watching Dark Place.
Is that like Garth Marenghi's Dark Place or?
Yes, yes. Okay. Which is just, it's superb. Blood. 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 And the recent rewatching of the first two seasons, unfortunately, because Channel 4 didn't have a hand in the co-production, had to resort to Dave Internet to watch Tales of the City.
Hmm.
Which, to be honest, I can't think of the last thing that Channel 4 made which, you know, really had me watching. Not helped by when I'm cat-sitting, for my in-laws, there's usually bugger all on at that time of day, and oh God, it's E4 again, and oh God, it's The Big Bang Theory again.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Channel 4 have always had that issue where they've basically just got the rights to something that's been super popular, and they've just played it to death.
Yeah, they'll just run it into the ground.
Friends.
Yeah, or How I Met Your Mother. Yeah.
Yes, that's true.
I feel like, so fragmentation for streaming, bad. This is probably the third time we've talked about this in the past 12 months, maybe fourth. Maybe no more than two. This is definitely the second time. and it's just like, because obviously the market's evolving and we're getting an insight into what the fuck the fuckers are up to. And like I said, as I said previously about Disney buying things, it is bad news for consumers because then they can aggregate all that fucking content and do whatever the fuck they want with it.
The number one thing to remember is it doesn't matter how many things that you like that a corporation makes. They are not your friends. They are there to make money. It may be a happy circumstance that, a movie studio, a TV studio, a TV channel, a game developer, a game publisher, a game platform. It's good that they happen to have things which align more to your tastes. They're not doing it because they like you.
Proof of this is the fact that they will drop anything just like that if the viewing figures are low enough. Or just not what they expected.
Yeah.
Or they've had a disappointing latest season of, this uber popular thing. We're going
to
drop it.
Or they've bought the rights to Thursday night college football.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Which is Fox News. Not Fox News, but it's basically Fox in the US, isn't it?
Yeah.
So they will have several hours less.
Yeah.
So, But, before we leave this... it's the back to the fundamental issue, which it's always been when it comes to consumption of any media, and people having access to it. Which is, if you make it easy, and if you make it hassle free, then people will pay for it, and people will enjoy it legally.
Yeah.
Point in practice, things like Netflix, where you have a wide range. I would say if Netflix wanted to sponsor me at this moment, then I'm perfectly happy with the idea, but they don't. It's like if Netflix suddenly drop or they lose all the things that I enjoy on the platform, then I'm not going to subscribe. It's as simple as that. I have no platform brand loyalty. It's easy for me to press the Netflix button on the on the TV that we've got, or to load up Netflix on one of my gaming devices, or just to go to the bookmark and I will browse, and I will see something I like and I will play it. If you make it harder for me to access whatever it is that I want to watch, and if pirates come along And, you know, they say, oh, you can watch it for free, but you might have a pop-up in the background, which you can easily close yourself. Or sometimes not even that. If the pirates make it easier to watch something, then people will use the pirates.
I mean, an example of the usability of Netflix is the fact that, well, not only does it not have ads, it also doesn't show you stuff that you cannot watch there and then without paying extra, which can't actually be said for Now TV, and it can't actually be said for Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
Prime will advertise stuff that, you know, you can, I don't know, maybe watch the first couple of seasons, but you'll have to pay for the rest.
We'll so pay
it's
obvious,
yeah, we'll pay for it outright. So it's obviously going to confuse people a bit more. And same with Now TV, where, okay, so you can kind of do the entertainment package, but it'll still advertise their movies to you or their kids' sports programming and whatnot, or sports and whatnot.
Yeah, it's like, you can watch this now.
No, you can't.
And that'll confuse people, because people will be thinking, okay, well, is this something that I can watch without paying any extra for?
Yeah.
Netflix, no, you don't have that issue. It's basically anything that you find on their service you can watch right now.
I can't believe I'm saying this, guys, but if the, put it this way, if the American market fucks itself up too badly, they're going to have people wishing that they had cable subscriptions again. But then you've got a bunch of network providers that don't actually have their own infrastructure, so they don't necessarily want people, you know, along those lines, and then, or thinking along those lines, and then here in the UK, you could end up with people wishing, God, I wish I'd subscribed to, because the thing is that you can't even guarantee with a Sky subscription now, if stuff starts moving onto like BritBox and moves off of Netflix, or they lose like HBO access, like you can't even guarantee in the next few years if Sky is going to be a good deal for entertainment, for genre shows.
I have to admit, I was pretty disappointed when I actually first got the Now TV box and whatnot, because, you know, all my life it's been like, oh, Sky have all the best shows first, they have all the exclusive content and whatnot, you know, you're going to be absolutely waiting ages for anything to come out on like DVD or on terrestrial TV, so, you know, that's the best way to watch. And then I finally get it and it's like, there's nothing on that I want to watch. All of this seems rather, you know, kind of a bit crap, that, you know, there's some dramas here that I'm not particularly interested in. There's,
yeah.
A bit disappointed.
That's why when it came to, you know, Virgin, you know, offering, you know, a switch to, you know, proper cable speeds here, it was, well, other than stuff like Game of Thrones, what is there on Sky?
And then moving on from that, I'm going to ask people to name one thing they've been up to.
Who are you looking at with that?
More you, Retroid.
That's what I thought. That's fair.
Yeah. Because we don't have much time left. So, what have you been up to, Retroid?
Well, very quickly, I will mention several.
Oh, no.
I've tried building my oscilloscope kit, but it hasn't worked. I think I got a duff kit. That's all I'm going to try fiddling with that, but yeah.
Are you sure you can't turn it into an EMF reader to look for ghosts?
Possibly. I could add a few more flashing lights on it.
Okay.
But mostly what we've been doing is we have been watching the Tales of the City on Netflix, which you
mentioned last episode.
Yes, but now we have finished it, and I can say that yes, it does live up to the original series. It is less tangentially cheesy than some of the I'm wanting to write an LGBTQ book series, but I have to put these other plot lines in, and I mentioned some of them last time where you just go, really. Okay. But, you know, there isn't really, you know, anything like that this time. And it's just great. I particularly liked the episode which was Anna Madrigal, who is the matriarch of the, you know, the house.
Mm.
You know, that where all the apartments are. Her appearing in San Francisco in 1963, I think it was. And her experience of a markedly less friendly to in LGBTQ people city than it subsequently became, you know, and it became famous for, you know, being in a friendly city to, you know, for want of a better term, alternative lifestyles. Which, of course, you know, it's the reason that Armistead Maupin moved there. It's the reason that the Tales of the City, you know, books exist, because it's, you know, one of the first places in the US where it was friendly to, you know, LGBTQ scenes.
Hmm.
And yeah, it fills in information about her character, how she was trying to deal with being a trans woman in 1963. And other people having, you know, less luck with it, shall we say.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just in general, it's just, I've really enjoyed the series existing. And I desperately hope that they're going, you know, Netflix are going to make another season of it. It's just been great to watch, and I've really enjoyed it being there, and genuinely sad when it finished. So damn, you know, what am I going to watch after that now? And the answer was Godzilla animated movies.
Right. Paul, what have you been up to?
I will stick to my one.
Mm-hmm.
Super Mario Maker 2.
How would you rate this video game on the Nintendo Switch?
Well, I've only played the story mode so far. But I've managed to complete all the levels on it. Well, apart from one, I think that one's hidden, but I know how to access it now. But yeah, it's quite challenging, and it's kind of interesting how, you know, obviously you have the platformer, which is basically, you know, Super Mario.
Yeah.
But they somehow managed to convert it into different kind of modes in a way. Like, you know, converting it into more of a kind of a puzzler, or, you know, turning it into a bullet hell type thing.
How does it compare to the first?
Well, I haven't really gone the extra mile with it, so I haven't actually been able to play it with, like, another person or whatnot, which obviously is one of the main features over the previous ones.
You haven't been able to go all the way.
No, I've not gone all the way, I'm afraid.
Not yet.
But on the whole, it's playing very well. There's more enemies, more features, you know, more to do. So, yeah, I'm kind of glad that I've got it, and just kind of want to, you know, kind of play it a bit more and get other people to, you know, kind of try some of the...
To be able to access the online features, do you need to have a Nintendo Online account?
I believe so, in the sense of, like, downloading other people's levels and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. You didn't have to do that with the previous one, so...
No, well, I mean, the previous one had free online, so...
Yeah. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's all I'm saying.
I will ask.
Okay.
And I'm not doing this to be a git.
That's a good start.
Yeah. Well, you could have said that's a good change. How different is it to the Wii U version? You know, have they completely rejigged it, or is it more like just a, oh, here it is again, but it's got extra things? Is it basically the Wii U version DX?
It's kind of hard to say, to be honest, because... I haven't actually got to the making the levels part yet, in essence.
Mm.
But the added features, you know, like being able to play with, you know, more people, like online and stuff as well, does kind of excite me a little bit. Have to admit.
Which I heard the servers went a bit down on Friday. Too many people.
Fair enough. I mean, you know, it's, you know, it was released on Friday.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's kind of in a way to be expected, you know, something like that. I mean, it's a bit like Nintendo Directs when you first kind of go onto them and you're watching them live, and, you know, the quality sometimes does dip and whatnot. But on the whole,
I did see. I don't know if you'll encounter this, but I did see a vague complaint from one of the game devs that I know. And he was saying that his daughter had tried to make a level or, you know, tried to access the online portion, but it needed a different code.
Oh, yeah, that was the thing.
Hmm.
It's got a different, like, they haven't given it the same system for other stuff.
I mean, I haven't tried that yet, but...
Do you want to try it during the week and report back next time we record?
Yeah, can do.
I'm just curious about that because I don't know how the online works on the Switch.
Yeah, I mean, I've been... whenever I get a game that has an online component, I always try and complete it fully on my own first and then go into online. Mm. Unfortunately, with Mortal Kombat 11, that was the previous game that I got, I didn't actually manage to do all of the single-player stuff because it kept on fucking crashing.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, well. Anyway, Emily?
I watched Chernobyl and the documentary that was made to coincide with it. Basically, I've been thinking about it, then realised that there was only... Well, when I started, 9 days left to watch it on Now TV. So I was like, okay, I'm going to watch it. So I watched it. It's an interesting kind of... adaptation of the events that happened, because let's face it, like, pretty freaking horrific.
And as it turned out, far more terrifying. It could have been far more terrifying.
Yeah, it could have been far worse. And it was just interesting, obviously, watching something that looked at. I mean, it was important to remember it was a dramatization, so there were like a couple of things that they did, as pointed out in the documentary. And I think the end of credits actually in the final episode, that kind of like showed where they'd kind of dressed things up for drama, but there wasn't much they dressed up.
They didn't really have to, did they?
No, because it was such a clusterfuck. And yeah, it was thoughtfully done, I feel. Obviously, the Russians don't like it, but that's because they hate anything that criticizes them these days.
Yeah, I have to admit, I'm looking forward to them doing their own version, so I can watch that with just one raised eyebrow permanently up.
Yeah, it's like I thought. It's just a bit ridiculous. Like, either because I can't imagine Putin being particularly fond of Gorbachev, like, these days and shit, or even Yeltsin, like in the 90s, like, why the fuck would he dress up the Russia of the past to benefit today? But heck no.
Surely it's not because it's a nationalism thing.
Oh, who knows? But anyway, Chernobyl's a really thoughtfully done adaptation. I have the feeling, though, that by the time that you guys listen to this episode, it won't be legitimately available on Now TV in the UK. You might need to use Dave Internet.
But it's okay, because you didn't see graphite on the roof.
No.
Because there's no way that type of reactor could explode.
Exactly. Exactly.
So it's fine.
But also, another reason it was interesting to watch was because when I was a kid growing up, I spent a lot of time ill and off school. And when my grandparents moved, because I would usually spend time with either one of my grandparents when I was ill because my parents were working, one of them finally got VHS player, and they got a lot of factual box sets on VHS.
Ooh.
And that included two classic Michael Palin series, Around the World in 80 Days and Pole to Pole.
Ah,
and
classics.
Pole to Pole, Palin visits Chernobyl or the surrounding area. Because obviously that's like 91, 92. So the Soviet Union's just recently fallen. And it's like 6 years after the events of what actually happened. And it's quite interesting. So I'd always been like vaguely aware of it as a thing, even as a kid. So to actually watch something about it was quite cool.
Although, did you see, I can't remember if it was the Sun or the Star sent out a tweet saying, you know, the new miniseries Chernobyl was based on a true event.
Yeah, that was like...
Is that really?
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
Anyway, that's all we've got time for this episode of the Nerds Assemble podcast. So it is good night from...
It's good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
It's good night from me, Paul Blewett, and I'm on Twitter as at Paul Blewett.
And it's good night from me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter at EMKingMA. You can find notes for this episode over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. We're also on Twitter and Instagram at NerdsPodcast. We're on Facebook as NerdsAssemble Podcast. You can find episodes also on iTunes/Apple Podcast, or whatever the hell it's calling itself now these days, because iTunes is being sacked. Stitcher and Spotify and
Pocket Casts again. Sound some warnings.
Good night.
With our special guest this week, Dave Internet.
With our special guest this week,
Dave Internet. I reckon we could.
And then we'll talk about Sandman series. Like, I am right in remembering that the Sandman series like has been extra, a degree of pound development adaptation hell.
Retroid's voice for an extra pound per episode.
I feel like they've been trying to do this for a very long time. So and I also feel like it's silence, and then one person responding. Is Seth Rogen also interested in Sandman?
£500 a month, and I'll scream in your ear about how terrible things are. Was who interested, sorry?
Seth Rogen.
I do not know.
I feel like in the past, I'm just going to Google this a minute.